later.
You just do amendments. I mean, you don't. You just do
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the House Transportation Finance Committee. I'll call the meeting to order for Tuesday, March 20th. And where's Clark? Where's Clark? How can we start? I'll have to. Representative Nelson, would you care to move the minutes of the last meeting?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll move the minutes from acceptance of the minutes from March 15th.
Thank you for that motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign, the minutes are approved. Our first bill up today is an Erdahl bill, House File 3301. Representative Erdahl, welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. We're very happy you could be with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Always good to make my infrequent appearances.
Welcome to the basement. I believe we're laying this bill over, but we're happy to hear a presentation. Right, to your bill.
First of all, I think we should start with the amendment that I have.
So what's the, I'm sorry, I'm we have an amendment labeled the A18 to put this bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Your bill is amended, Representative Erdahl, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what the amendment did, I'm seeking funding and it moved it from the driver services operating account to the general fund. And if you recall, a year ago, I appeared before this committee when the chairs didn't squeak as much, and we had a bill on increasing the penalty for violating the school bus stop arm provision. In the last tabulation in April of 2017, the report was that there were 701 violations in that day. So there are a huge number of violations, and we would hope that the increase in the penalty would serve notice that we're serious about this not happening. However, the discussion around, I believe, this table, this committee, a year ago, was that we needed to do something more about public awareness. And so that's what this bill does. It provides $50,000 to go into a public service program to make the drivers of Minnesota aware or more aware about the needs to obey the school bus stop arm provision. So that essentially is what the bill is.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. You see your testifier?
Yes.
Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brad Lundell today here with the for the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation, and we are sponsoring this bill. I also wanted to mention in talking to Tom Kelleher from MSBOA, the Minnesota School Bus Operator Association, they are also in favor of this bill. As Representative Erdahl said, every year the Department of Public Safety does a spot check as to how many violations on the school bus arm law take place on a day, not a week or a month, but a day. And there were 701 violations in one day. And I think that how does that happen? And I think that we've looked at penalties, we've looked at a variety of other ways to try to, you know, get this under better control. And I think that one of the things we think needs to happen is a kind of a more comprehensive approach to public education through public service announcements, through other ways to reach into communities to find ways to better inform the public as to stop arm law and what's expected of drivers when they violate, or, you know, what to do when they're around a school bus. I think it was a year ago that there was serious, but not, could have been more serious, violation of stop arm up in Otsego, where three students were hit by a driver who was ignoring stop arm law. I believe in that case, and that it was not distracted driving, it was not drunken driving, it was simply ignorance of the school bus stop arm law. I think that, again, we want to thank Representative Rudolph. We want to thank this committee for talking about this issue. And again, whatever we can do to help reduce and hopefully eliminate stop arm violations now and in the future, we're certainly willing to do. So again, thank you for this time today.
Thank you. A question from Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to express how much I support that we have to do something to improve both awareness and possibly penalties, because obviously this is putting kids in extreme jeopardy. What I wanted to also do is to extend this thought process into people that are serving as crossing guards and the attendant students that are using it. Somehow in my mind, these really do seem to be connected to that, and that the driver who buzzes by a school bus is likely also to buzz by a crossing guard or be just too busy to slow down and give time and space for that particular service. So to the extent that the greater wisdom would be that we can bundle these and or somehow make it a whole announcement that it provides that safety or that assistance across all of the places that we're trying to assist our students from getting into our transportation system or across the street to get to school. I think we'll be well spent and well served. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Salk. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I really support this bill. Maybe a question I have to the testifier would be, on average, how many buses are out every day?
Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, I'll have to get you that information. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Mr. Chair.
And Baker.
Again, the only reason I bring it up is because I think this is an important issue to talk about, but also when I hear my local co-op utility folks that are trying to get people to move over and slow down, I think this is very tightly aligned with the same thing. Yellow lights mean to slow down and pay attention. I know I see signs and advertisements on the back of CAT buses or rural transit buses all the time. Maybe we can do a better job of putting, I'm going to guess there's maybe 6,000 buses a day that might be driving around and that we could use as actually moving billboards. If it's on the back of a bus and it's for safety, it might be the thing to do. But I think it also needs to be sort of thought together with our other colleagues, again, our state patrol and our utility crews that are working alongside the road. So maybe together we can do a more refined look at slowing down and watching this kind of thing to some degree. But again, it's a great bill. I fully support it. Thank you.
Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, I think one of the issues you need to look at there, though, is the national school bus standards, because there are standards that limit as to how much verbiage there can be on a bus and those types of things. I know that there was talk in the interim about putting more LED lighting, new lighting onto school buses to make them more visible. I think that's something that we're also supportive of and looking at. But again, we share your concern and we certainly want to work with everybody to, again, bring greater awareness to those vehicles that where there needs to be more caution exercised.
Thank you. Any final words,
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Erdahl? Let's go to Representative Hausman first.
Mr. Chair, since we're holding this over, does that mean, I mean, it requires a funding? Do we revisit it with the funding bill later, or how do
yes.
we make sure this
is Representative Hausman, that is exactly right. We have no target at the moment, and so I'm holding it here until we get the target, and then we'll determine what the next step is for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The traffic light will be green, red, yellow, whatever at that point.
Senator Erdahl, final remarks.
I'd like to just comment to the comments by Representative Baker, Representative Salk. I think, you know, certainly, you know, we can be open to looking at other things with this. In particular, in Litchfield, just a few months ago, utility workers were working near one of the stoplight intersections, and a truck hit them, and they fell on top of the truck. I mean, it was a semi, you know, the high top.
Jeez.
So they were both saved by the truck that hit them. That's all I've got. Just a little side of this thing. Thank you very much for your...
I take it, Representative Erdahl, that they were in some kind of an elevated position?
They were on a utility truck, kind of.
So they were up in the...
They were up in the air.
Up in the air, and then they got knocked off of the...
Knocked
perch.
Off the utility truck, and onto the top of the truck.
Sounds like a movie, doesn't it? With that, Representative Erdahl, your bill is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
We will jump ahead on the agenda to Representative Lucero's bill, House File 3485. We have a handout. The Joes are taking care of.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. The other authors were not in the room, so that's why we jumped ahead to your bill. This will also be laid over for possible inclusion to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the handouts that's, first of all, I'd like to move House File 3485.
For possible inclusion.
For possible inclusion.
Correct. Thank you.
And so, members, there's three handouts coming around. One of them is an amendment. I have spoken to Chair Torkelson in advance. I've also referenced and spoken with Representative Hornstein on this amendment. I did not make the 24-hour rule cut, but it sounded like Representative Hornstein was amenable to allowing this to be offered. If I'm correct.
Mr. Chair, ultimately it's up to the chair, but as the minority lead, I didn't see an issue with it, but obviously it's the chair's call.
Hearing no objection, will allow the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'd like to offer the amendment. And what the amendment does is change it from language currently, and I'll get into the bill, but it changes from a hard 50-50 split to no less than 49%, and then allowing 2% discretion. So it's allowing some flexibility.
Perhaps you'd like to tell us what we're splitting here.
Okay, so what we are splitting. The Corridors of Commerce program, the funding program, first came into existence in 2013. And then we passed another program allocating funds last legislative session. And so the program is currently, we are waiting for awards to be announced. One of the handouts that you're receiving, on the back of it has a series of six slides. These slides are from MnDOT, and in the slides you can see that the historical approach that MnDOT has been taking to Corridors of Commerce funding is to allow for a soft 50-50 split between metro area and then 50% to the rest of Minnesota outside the metro area. So that has been their historical approach to this. Another one of the handouts you're receiving is from the Metropolitan Council. This is a letter that was passed out to members of Metropolitan Council's Technical Advisory Committee, and that's why you can see that there's no date. So this was a draft, but this was subsequently sent to Patrick Ruderman of MnDOT. And what the Metropolitan Council is seeking to do is to change that approach that MnDOT has historically used in order to get more funds from the Corridors of Commerce funding program to be allocated to the metro area. Now, that caused many flags to us in rural Minnesota. We want to preserve MnDOT's historical approach to the roughly 50-50 split. So what my bill seeks to do is to codify into statute simply that requirement because of the potential a threat that the funds might be less than that rough 50-50. So that's what my bill does. It was originally drafted as a hard 50-50 cut, a split, I received some really constructive feedback that it would be wise to allow some flexibility. I'm completely agreeable to that. That's what my amendment does, is so that there'd be no less than 49%, and then to allow for a 2% discretion in either direction.
Thank you, Representative. Let's, I believe everyone has the amendment in hand now. I'm going to code it A1, even though it is uncoded. So to the amendment A2, I've been informed by staff I was mistaken. It's coded as A2. To the amendment, Representative Lucero.
I would offer the A2 amendment, members, and I would hope that you would support it.
Thank you. Lucero moves the A2 amendment to get the shape the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
With one opposition, the amendment passes. Two-year amended bill, Representative Lucero.
Members, that is all I have. Again, just to reiterate the historical approach, codifying that into statute, and I would look for any questions.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lucero. First question I have is the what are you controlling the metropolitan area? Because it's a former legislator, a former member here, and a member on this committee used to say Chisago County is not in the seven county metro area considered by the Metropolitan Council, but in the highway department's area, it's in the metro district for the highway department. So does this conclude Chisago County in your metro, or where are you drawing the lines, I guess, is the question I have.
So, Mr. Chair, I don't define the metro area in this bill, but my intention would be if the metro area is defined in the current Corridors of Commerce program to obviously utilize the same definition, to not change that. If it's not, then to use the definition that MnDOT is using, which I presume would be the metro district. But if that's an area of concern, and since it's being laid over, I would definitely be willing to make that a hard-coded definition.
Follow up with something else.
Mr. Chair, we need to, when we're defining an area, because if this is an example where the metropolitan area is defined two different ways, we need to have that locked down, so we need to find that out. Mr. Chair, the other question I have and a concern I have, I think the amendment makes it a little less onerous, but locking it down to hard numbers, if you've got two lists of projects, metro, outstate, and say this, are you not going to be able to fund projects because, well, that'll put us over the 51% in one area or the other. I mean, I think a soft rule that the MnDOT's been using of 50% in metro and 50% outstate is a good rule politically for everybody, but to lock it down too tight could be problematic with projects that come up because they don't always neatly match that 50-50 local or metro and outstate, and I think this is making it more difficult for MnDOT and for us to get the thing we want done to get our roads fixed.
Mr. Comment, Representative Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and because I agree with the historical approach of MnDOT, and I share your concerns, and hence the reason for my amendment here is to allow for some flexibility. But the motivation for this is the potential threat that, as we can see here, that Metropolitan Council was pushing, a potential threat that we might go 60-40, right? So if 2% isn't enough flexibility to address the concern that you and I both share, maybe we need to do it to 48%, and allow 4% flexibility. But soft is not defined right now. So we don't have a definition of what soft is, a soft split. So this is my attempt, 49-49 is attempt to define what soft is.
On to Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a principle, Representative Lucero, I heard loud and clear in Mankato when the folks from the Department of Transportation came down. They did really a wonderful job of walking us through the corridors process. The room was full of people, and word got out that there was an effort to spend more money in the metropolitan area. You would guess right that there was a collective gasp in the audience, because I think people just assumed it would be around 50-50. And just a comment, I think you're going to have a little trouble with whether you go to 49 or 48. Where the concept of a soft split does need some flexibility. For instance, if that little little stretch between Nicollet and New Ulm needs it, you know, came in $1 million over, and we were denied that important piece of roadway because it didn't, it violated the 49. I think there'd be a lot of problems with that. I don't know how you solve it, but I encourage you to look at other areas on that. It's interesting, the corridors, I just want to comment, and thanks for sharing the letter from the Metropolitan Council. I just want to share with some reflections on this as someone who's worked with this program for a number of years, and I want to thank my colleague, Representative Hornstein, who really, you know, maybe it's a bit of a can of worms, but hey, we got a road built in Nicollet County because of this program. And I know there's some capacity on I-94, and there's real roads being built. It gives us hope. But I think this memo really kind of points out kind of the two philosophies that are involved here, and two angles that differ. And I'm not one I want to stifle the urban-rural split in Minnesota. I don't like it, and I could go on forever on that. But this program interestingly addresses two things. Corridors of commerce, and again it's about commerce, in the metropolitan area, talk about increasing populations, increased congestion, et cetera, in the metropolitan area. But I want to remind this committee that when this was brought forward by Representative Hornstein, and certainly what we saw when it was developed, was in rural Minnesota, we saw corridors of commerce as being the opportunity to link cities, regional centers, between themselves. And it's interesting, I took a trip to Iowa this summer. They've done that in Iowa. They did that years ago. They chose to have four lanes between all of their New Ulms and Mankatos and Rochesters, etc. And I think they benefit from that. And Iowa, to this day, has a dispersion of economic activity in a lot of small cities. So I just want to remind this committee that when we're talking corridors of commerce in the rural area, it's very much a matter of connecting regional centers. And it's in those regional centers that really we have probably our best prospects for not only job growth, but more importantly, job growth that entails good wages, which is really our fundamental challenge in rural Minnesota. I don't know how we solve this, but these two philosophies have to be reconciled. Maybe they can't be reconciled in one program, but at least for now they need to be reconciled. And so the issue you bring forward in this bill is apt. I'm not so sure we can solve it, but it is important. And where I live, that the concept that there be a fair split between the metropolitan area and rural Minnesota is absolutely essential.
Well, thanks. Representative Johnson, for emphasizing the importance of Highway 14.
You know. Did I mention Highway 14?
Did you? 23. I was disappointed when you said it once. Usually you work it into your paragraph about six times, so you're falling a little short. But thanks anyway. And by the way, you know, the situation in Iowa is dramatically different because they don't really have a metropolitan area. That's supposed to be funny. I don't know. Sorry. I guess nobody gets the Iowa jokes here. Yeah. Anyway. Next, we have a question from Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to just get some more information. I don't know that you'll be able to answer this, Representative Lucero. As we talk about this 50-50 split and codifying it, it seems to be, and this is the way we operate the Capitol, it seems to be a political decision to do that, not necessarily based on need. And I was just wondering, do we, and we all have needs across the state, so I'm not saying this isn't the right approach. What I would like to know is just to have the information to understand where this money is coming from and how from around the state to be paying for this program. Do we have any staffers here who know how the split of the money that ends up getting into this program comes from across the state of Minnesota? Is it 50? Is it 50-50? Or what is it?
I'm not sure we have that information available at our fingertips today, Representative Bernardi. But we'll get that to you at our earliest convenience.
That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions at this time. You know, and I hate to agree with Representative Johnson, but once in a while I do. And I think there's really an overemphasis on the rural-metro split. I think I think there are other issues that should also be important considerations when it comes to where we invest our transportation dollars, one of them being our connections with other states, even Iowa. Well, I got one laugh. That's good. But I am serious about that. You know, the commerce of the state of Minnesota isn't just within our borders. It's also outside of our borders. You mentioned interregional connections. Those are important. There's other transportation issues that we could and should consider besides just thinking about this as a battle between spending resources in the Metro or spending resources in greater Minnesota. So thank you for bringing this issue forward, Representative Lucero. I believe it still needs a little work, but it's an important issue and was highlighted by what you highlighted here today from the Metropolitan Council trying to get there. I won't say it, but thank you. Any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank everybody who supports this, because it's not a partisan issue. And this, in an ideal world, we would go forward as MnDOT has done, and I want to commend MnDOT. They've done a great job on this program, trying to be even in their distribution of this across the state of Minnesota. And in an ideal scenario, that would continue. But because there's the potential that that is threatened, that was the motivation for this. But we can't always assume, and we know what assuming does to both, you know, we know the old phrase. So I appreciate this hearing and to be able to highlight this important funding program, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll renew the motion that House File 3485 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next, Representative Albright. Right. Albright. Welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee, Representative. Please, what's the motion?
It's a 3.5 million. We're going to lay it over.
This also involves general fund money, so the motion on this bill will be to lay it over. Representative Albright, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you and members for the opportunity to make presentation to you of House File 3616. Once again, this is the suburb-to-suburb transit pilot project. We came before this committee last year. You were welcoming. I remember some of the very, very favorable comments that Representative Hornstein made. So I'm looking forward to another good conversation about this. Let me just remind you that last year we came before this committee seeking $1 million for operating dollars. The bill that you have before us today goes beyond that and actually asks for replacement of vehicles that are in the barn right now that are beyond their operational age. And so with that, I have two testifiers today, Jerry McDonald, who is the chair of STA, and Luther Wagner, the director of Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. The S2S project is and has been very successful. It will begin its third year of operations, getting people to their jobs. So with that, I would open it up to any opening conversation or just to make presentation of the two testifiers I brought with me today.
We'll move on to the testifiers. Mr. McDonald, would you like to go first? Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing us today. My name is Jerry McDonald. I am the current chair of the Suburban Transit Association. I'm also the past chair and current board member of Southwest Transit, and I am a member of the Chanhassen City Council. We are here today before you to, as Representative Albright has said, to ask for some capital dollars. This is our third year of running this demonstration project. And one of the things I want to talk about before I turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Winder, is that we do have some history. And last year when we were here, there was a lot of concern about our initial, foray into providing this demonstration project. That was Route 494. And as I'm sure everyone is aware, because we did get a lot of press on that, we ended up transporting very few people. After a month of doing that, we went back to the drawing board and began to evaluate, and at the end of the second month, we pulled the plug on that project. We did a post-mortem to look at what had gone wrong, because all of our initial information said that this should have been very successful of moving people back and forth between the corridors and the communities on the western suburbs. What we determined was that we had overlooked the issue of the last mile. We could get people to transit stations, but unfortunately all these businesses and the jobs are not located right around transit stations, or they're not within walking distance. So we began to look at this problem and thought, how can we solve it? One of the things that we determined was that maybe we needed to go to a different corridor, and that was the birth of the 495 route. And one of the things that we looked at to make that successful was we actually went out to the business community, because there are a number of jobs down in the Shakopee area between Amazon, Shutterfly, Mystic Lake Casino, that is really looking to get workers down to their area. So we thought this might work, but that alone was not going to be enough. So what we looked at was, how do we solve the last mile? We went out to these businesses and began to arrange, agreements that they would help in this transportation of workers from a transit station out to these individual jobs. What Mr. Winder is going to go through is the success that we've had with that, because on a monthly basis, as the charts will show, this route has really taken off. It has become very popular, and I think within our communities, south of the river, it is very well held in high regard and high esteem. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Winder, and he can go through some details.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony, and you might want to pull that microphone over a little bit. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon. Luther Winder, Executive Director of Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. I first want to start off by saying thank you to everyone in this room. I want to thank the ones who supported, and I also wanted to thank the ones who didn't, because based on the feedback from everyone here, we hopefully have put a concept together that provides enough information, enough success, as well as enough of the criticism, as well as the critiques we've received, in order to satisfy all the things we've heard throughout the duration of running this particular service. We have a handout that's been passed out. The first page, just to give an idea of where the 485 demonstration project currently operates. Again, just for reference, from Mall of America, it goes to Burnsville Transit Station. From Burnsville Transit Station, then goes to Marshall Road Transit Station, which is in Shakopee. And then from there, we actually have two, which I'll get into as the station goes forward, two investment private partnerships, extending the route to Amazon in Shakopee, and as well as extending the route to Mystic Lake Casino and Hotel in Prior Lake. On page two. An update. So since we've talked since last year, we've extended partnership with Amazon and Mystic Lake. There's been a funding commitment from Scott County Capital Improvement Plan. We've secured $500,000 annually in private contributions. The Route 405 makes up currently right now 3.5% of Minnesota Valley's system-wide ridership. And I want us all to look at that, about 90,000 trips a year. So in a year and a half, we went from a service. But before August of 2016, there was no viable way for individuals in the core to access the jobs, as well as entertainment benefits in Scott County, as well as even in some aspects of Dakota County. But since that time, in a year and a half, not only has it been successful, it now accounts for 3.5% of our total ridership. The highest monthly ridership was in November 2017, with over 10,000 customers, an increase of over 200% compared to November of 2016. Talk a little about the public-private partnerships, private investment. The direct investment from the public-private partnerships has fueled the growth of the route. The route has designed to support the fast-growing employment base in Scott County and received support from businesses including Amazon, Mystic Lake, and Canterbury Park. In August of 2016, just to give you a timeline, Amazon partnered to provide direct service on Route 495 to the Amazon facility in Shakopee on Shenandoah. On December of 2016, MVTA begins coordinating with Mystic Lake, first and last mile shuttle, which that was the barrier to the 494, which is what you see as we look to solve, obviously, in the first iteration, the first few months of the 495. And it's a lot, and those dates will really become more significant when I show you the ridership growth and how it's taken off as you've seen the investment from the businesses in the area. We fast forward to August of 2017. NVTA and Amazon partner provide additional services from the Cedar Riverside area via the 465 with direct connection to the 495. I'll talk about that on a future slide. As well as recently, in February of 2018, we've actually expanded the 495 for direct service now to Mystic Lake Casino Hotel. Regional connections, Cedar Riverside area. This is what we call the Route 465. One of the things I heard when I started the agency back in April of 2016 from the business community was there was a need and a desire to tap into the market as well as the workers in the Cedar Riverside area. From that particular time, as I talked about in the past few years, I've testified that when I sat in a room with these employers, I heard they had 40% vacancy rates. 50% vacancy rates, and at that time, one of the employers hadn't even built their second tower yet, the second hotel tower. You might be able to figure out who that was. As well as another employer that we do serve hadn't even come online yet. So what we wanted to do was, and it took some time to do that, we were able to partner with Amazon for a direct connection now to be able to extend our 465 service, which is a very successful service we run Monday through Friday, to the Cedar Riverside area, UNM campus. We're able to extend that now on the weekends. We have select trips on the weekends on Saturday and Sunday, 100% contribution from Amazon, open to the public. So not only are we able to tap into that market now, we're also able now to transport students, which we've seen that we're taking classes in the South Metro area, can now access classes as well as the library and other functions on the weekends at the UNM campus. It's been very successful. Let's talk about the SOS ridership program. Employer participation has had a direct, as I talked about, impact on success of the route. So what I want to show is that when we started the route back in November, well, we look at this, we've done a year snapshot. We looked at November 2017, we had about 3,500 customers utilize the route. Then you fast forward to December of 2016, and you see that 5,580, that's the time that Mr. Blake actually started to shuttle. So as you kind of look at the timeline and you continue to go through these dates, we'll directly see some of the increases we have in ridership are directly related to some of the investment we had. We would not have been able to get this investment as well as provide this service without the support as well as the funding we received from the legislature. Ridership of MBTA. Back in that same period of time, this group accounted for 6.6% of our total ridership. As I talked about today, back in November, and on the fast forward, I got an even better metric. In that same period of time, that year snapshot went to 3.3%. Over 90,000 individuals utilized that route back in 2017. Now, let's get into some of the metrics and the service facts. I know there's been some information that may have been disseminated, but I want to make sure that we all have the right information that really showcases beyond the full picture of what the route is. So there's been 72% growth from ridership throughout 2017. The 2017 subsidy per passenger is $13.95. I'm going to circle back to that at the end. 4.2% of the total ridership, 3.1% on weekday ridership for February of 2018. So understand that actually it's continued to grow as far as our total ridership is concerned back in this February 2018. So we're still seeing that growth there. We average about 300 rides in a weekday per day, 298 on Saturday, and 241 on Sunday. And this is important because what you see is there's no drop-off potentially on ridership on the weekends as opposed to during the week because these individuals who are utilizing the route have 7-day work schedules. They don't work Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4:30. They work on Saturday. They work on Sunday. And understanding that Minnesota Valley is the only suburban transit provider, they provide any service on the weekends. My other two do not. My other three do not, and you don't even provide late night service. Including connecting MBTA routes, there are 240,000 jobs from our connection that they can access based on this particular link to our other routes, and over 140,000 people. Route alone reaches 15,000 jobs and over 6,000 people. That's just the standard route in itself. And if you talk about the 24,000 jobs and the 26,000 people, if you include the Shakopee connectors, which circulate throughout the country. One of the big employers now on our connector routes that have seen tremendous growth is MyPillow. So I'm thanking MyPillow for, didn't realize we have so many people that were able to get there now, but they've really been quite an advocate for the route and continue to talk about how it's successful to them actually filling their own particular delivery agency. It connects 7 MBTA routes. It also connects the Blue Line and 2 other providers, which is SmartLink and Metro Transit. And each day, the 485 drives 838 miles and provides over 26 hours of revenue service. What I want to get back to again is that subsidy per passenger and some of these metrics. The Route 485 is a unique route because there's private investment. The current model for how we report it only deals with fare as well as ridership. But how do you put investment? So sometimes the numbers are provided. We have no way to quantify. We know how much we provided for provide those services, but we're not able to put that into the regional system because it's simply not calculated because no one else does it. So from the standpoint, from that particular standpoint, then anything you see as far as fare box recovery or passes per hour in this overall system, please reach out because we'll give you that calculation based on when we actually add the investment from the employers. And as I said before, it's been over $500,000 since the service generation. I'd like to close with that, and I'll turn it over to the questions.
Thank you. Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of you may know that this is just as the last bill. There are always hidden in every bill inequities, and this particular one has been a problem for me almost since we changed the status of the opt-outs. And it's so unfair to East Metro that Bev Scalzi, some of you may remember her, had a bill one time saying, well, let's let the East Metro suburbs opt in too. Because even though it says suburb to suburb, it's actually no suburbs in the East Metro and many of them in the North, South, and West. It's only a small group. And it's a small group that when we used to fund this with property taxes, they opted out of the metro system, which was fine because they were going to pay for it all with their own property taxes. But then I think it was when Ron Abrams was tax committee chair, he said, let's not do this with property taxes anymore. And we're going to grandfather in this particular little group of suburbs. We're going to grandfather them in, and nobody else can be let in anymore. It's just them. But now they have a special advantage that no one else does. I can't forget some of the investments of the past. I still have the 2016 newspaper that pointed out when we last let them try a pilot project. There's a 2016 newspaper that shows an empty bus and says during rush hour on Monday, the new route had no passengers. And then they get some of the statistics that a driver said he had picked up 9 passengers total in the route's first 3 weeks. And another driver who said he had 2 daily regulars. So I'm always a little bit of a skeptic about this, particularly since the subsidy is $13.95 per passenger. My question is, it sounds as though the desire is to purchase new buses. I'm assuming that Metro Transit has a schedule on which they replace all buses for the entire system. And I wonder why wouldn't it just, we would just follow that procedure. Whatever the rule is for all other parts of the system, that's when you would get new buses. Instead of asking us for $3.5 million for new buses.
Who would like to address the question?
President, Representative, excellent question. Currently, the Route 485, because it's been funded by the legislature, is considered expansion service. I will say, since the iteration, so we had, in order to provide the service, we had to keep retired buses. They're currently not on schedule to be replaced because it's not funded currently by Invest funding. So one of the things that I would talk about is that when I first started this route, one of the things that I did reach out to was I reached out to the council to talk about any type of assistance they could give in order to provide any type of capital for us to put buses on the road. At that time, I told them these buses had a 30% higher breakdown percentage of our current of our North fleet. we had service, but customers were depending on getting to their particular jobs and need to get there on time, but our equipment was in bad repair. I was told that they would look at it and it would maybe get back to me. And to date, I haven't heard anything and they haven't gotten back and have been able to provide that based on the fact that it's an expansion service. So that's why we're here at the legislature. I'm hopefully able to secure the funding so that we can continue to provide this funding. I also do want to comment related to just how this route has also been funded. I would say that all service providers, and I think this is something across the board, we have all put in various different proposals into regional solicitation on how we can serve our communities. Unfortunately, based on the rankings, suburb service simply doesn't always score as well based on how some of these projects are categorized. But as you see, if it's allowed to be given funding and allowed to the time to mature and to grow, we can see positive benefits. I think about the same time, that same 2016 on Route 494, that had you guys had the good fortune and the good fortune to thank you to continue that funding, had you cut that funding off, over 100,000 people would not have access to employment today. We've lifted a lot of people, and I see them every single day, out of, I would say, poverty, out of jobs and providing them with higher wage jobs with benefits and providing with reasonable commute times. And we're proud of that, and we're proud of what we've been able to do. But we do need your support, and I'd love to come and talk to you anytime you want as far as how we can work together in order to get that support.
And Mr. Chair, I don't know if Met Council is coming forward to testify, but I would be interested in their policy about replacement of buses. I recall at the early stage of this particular Suburban Transit Association, I remember hearing a story that they were, Metro Transit was giving some buses to them for their use, and they believed the upholstery was quite adequate. I think, as I recall the story, they actually took pictures of it to assure them. But when they gave the buses, the Suburban Transit Association said, but it's got Metro Transit's logo on, and we want our logo, and so we're going to reupholster them anyway. One of the reasons that this just troubles me so is the rest of the system, the vast Metro Transit, had to fight like heck, I mean, facing cuts of $100 million, and, to see the difference in how these systems are treated just puzzles me greatly. I don't understand the decision making around this.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question goes to the metrics and facts page. I just want to clarify, make sure I'm reading this right. So under the 300 average rides weekday, that is per ride and not round trip, so the actual people number of people actually being using this system could be as low as 150 people. But am I correct that the average rides includes just from start to end?
Yes.
Thank you. The other question, Mr. Chair, if I continue, is it just in regards to the subsidy per passenger? I was unclear. This $13.95 that you have as per passenger, could you clarify, is that the state's portion of that subsidy, or does that include the dollars from Amazon or some of the others as well? Is there any way to break that out separately?
Yes, I could provide you with the breakdown. I could provide the committee, and it does include the contributions from Mystic Lake Casino as well as Amazon. Because it's a little bit skewed if we don't provide what's been invested in the particular route, because that does affect the subsidy per passenger. It's not all funded by the legislator. The subsidy per passenger is also helped subsidized and funded by the private investment of the route. So our calculation takes that into account. So we could send that to you. And we can send you both ways. We'll send it to you both ways, the way that's provided by the council and the way that's provided by the way we do our calculation broken out by the investment.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you correctly remember my support. I support transit in the suburbs and greater Minnesota and the metro area. And along the lines of Representative Petersburg, how does this subsidy per passenger compare with, for example, the Metro Council's bus system and rail system?
Mr. Winder.
There's a range of subsidies per passenger based on the service type. One of the things that we look at for this particular service is we're currently submitting research papers on. We believe that we believe we've actually started a new service type for the nation. When we look at this right now, this is currently considered express service, but there's not necessarily it's really, if you look at it, it's reverse commuter, suburban express, but in the opposite direction. And from the days that it runs, as well as 7 days a week and the hours it serves, so that it operates like a local, but has express characteristics and also serves the first and last mile component to it. So it's not traditionally just express service the way it's calculated out. So it's hard to, so when you look at it, yes, this stacks up really well compared to some routes and not other routes in particular. That's why it's a range, it's a particular average. But our thought process, and we're hoping pretty soon we'll get our determination that we have for the new service type. Because I will say I've talked about this service to a number of my colleagues, as well as you've all presented a number of conferences. We've had a lot of different interests around the country, from Las Vegas, how you got the private investment, to Chicago, to places near and far, concerning how you're able to do this and how you're able to solve that first and last mile perspective. So it's a range. Thank you.
I do not see any more questions at this time. We'll renew the motion that House File 3616 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Oh, did you have any last remarks, Representative? I'm sorry, I didn't mean
to cut
you off. I could just tell that.
You read me right.
Thank you. House File 1876, Representative Swazinski.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Is he here?
I'll split it with Paul.
You can justify it by splitting if he's here.
Split it with
He was here a little bit ago.
Members, we seem to have misplaced Representative Swazinski. I don't know where he's gone. We'll wait just a couple of minutes, and if we can't find him, we'll be done. Representative Hornstein, don't you have a story to tell us or something?
No, not currently, but I'll think of something.
Okay.
I can tell you a story if you want me to.
Okay.
So, do you want to use the microphone? Or if you're looking for a story, I've got a story.
Okay. Representative Petersburg is going to entertain us for a minute.
Because I think we can make fun of ourselves, this has to do with legislators and what we're about to do all summer long, which is walking around door knocking. And one day this legislator was walking in his district, and he came across this open field in which there were five or six, 10, 11-year-old boys sitting around in a circle on the ground, and a puppy was in the middle, and he walked over to him and says, "What are you guys doing with a puppy?" And he says, "Oh, we're not doing anything with a puppy. We're just all telling lies, and whoever tells the biggest lie will get the puppy." And he thought, you know, that's really not a good thing for the kids to do, and he thought to himself, I should probably give him some words of advice. And so he said, "You know, boys, when I was your age, I would never thought of telling a lie." And one of the boys looked up at him and looked at the others and says, "Okay, boys, he gets the puppy."
Oh,
Mr. Chair, I see he's abiding by your rule that no one on the committee should be more funny than the chair.
Now I see you may be crossing the line today. Members, we can't seem to find Representative Swazinski. We probably have room in the agenda for Thursday, so for today, our meeting is adjourned.
The lesson is don't research that in the physical band. It's funny when they have five. You guys are like the teacher. You see what the teacher has to do. Oh my God, the teacher has a lot.
We must be really efficient.
I usually have the